Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and here's a sound I bet you enjoy hearing. Let's see if we can get something up here for you. Oh, that's one of my favorites. Oh, isn't that a wonderful song? That's the song of the Cardinal, of course, and it's one that you hear pretty much right now loud and clear across a good share of Wisconsin, and it's kind of a fun time of the year to be hearing it because they like to perch right up on the top of the tree, and when we have no leaves, we can see them. Larry Mueller here again. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Cardinal's a great way to introduce our talk today about the Great Wisconsin Birdathon and talking birds here in the state of Wisconsin with our two guests. With me in the studio today, Karen Etter-Hale, chair of the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative Steering Committee. She's also executive secretary of the Madison Audubon Society.
Anymore, Larry. I'm with the Wisconsin Audubon Council now.
With the Wisconsin Audubon Council now. Well, you know, I should have known that. And I will make sure I get it right next time. In fact, thanks anyway for joining us. They really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Ryan Brady is with us as well. By phone, Ryan is the research scientist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Wildlife Management. He's the bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative and science coordinator for the second Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas Project. Ryan, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Larry. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. You know, I'm talking about the Great Wisconsin Birdathon. I used it in my introduction, and there may be people saying, what the heck's the Great Wisconsin Birdathon? And Karen, talk about that. What is it and what are its goals?
Well, the Great Wisconsin Birdathon is kind of like opening day for sports. It's an opening day for birds returning to Wisconsin. It's a way to connect with the birds, raise very much needed funds for them to keep them in good shape here in Wisconsin. And here we are. Today is opening day. We're ready, and we hope that everyone who's listening will join us in one way or another.
Yeah, so tax day and Wisconsin Birdathon day, and it's not just one day, by the way. It runs for a couple months, right?
Right. It runs. The migration has been on already. If you're watching the radar, you can actually see the birds coming north, but the big migration is going to be in the next month, and the Birdathon goes through June 15th.
And Ryan Brady, could turn to you for a minute here. Are there specific areas where the Birdathon takes place, or is it all over the state?
The Birdathon takes place all over the state. There's different components of it that are locally oriented, but you can do this anywhere across the state of Wisconsin. Essentially, it's like a walkathon where you are heading out within a 24-hour period to see as many birds as you can, and instead of getting pledges for the number of miles you've walked, you're getting pledges for the number of species that you find. And if you can't necessarily go out and do the birding yourself, you can also donate to your favorite individual or team that is participating in the event. But you can do it anywhere, anytime, which is one of the beautiful things about the Birdathon.
Yeah, and I was looking at some of the teams. Some of the team names and such are pretty interesting and pretty intriguing, and I noticed a few of them end their day at a restaurant or a tavern of some sort to extend the day a little bit.
Absolutely. We want to have fun while we're doing this, Larry.
Oh, and it's got to be a lot of fun to do it. By the way, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in here. Are you a birder? Have you ever taken part in a bird count? I'd love to hear about that, or maybe you have some questions about the Birdathon or birds in your area. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the name of our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Just go there and get yourself involved. And so anybody can take part, so the Natural Resources Foundation, I know, organizes the Great Wisconsin Birdathon. What kind of support does it provide to birders who want to get involved? Karen, let's go to turn
everything,
to you.
Everything you need is on wibirdathon.org, including forming your own teams, donating to a team, maybe your favorite name of the team, or to go on a birdathon tour. And I just did want to mention that Ryan mentioned that you could go out for 24 hours and bird, but you can do just part of a day, and you can do it from your house. You don't need to be a bird expert. You can do it pretty much any way you want to do it.
So do we get some education, or does somebody wants to get involved, how do they, I'm going to say, I don't know, one bird song from another, how do you get involved?
Well, I think everybody knows a few birds, so you go
sure.
to the wibirdathon.org, and it has start a team, it has you make up a team name, perhaps, or you can just do it on your own, and you pick a day between April 15th and June 15th, and then you do all or part of a day and count what you do know. I'm sure that you know quite a few birds, actually, and I think most people do.
Yeah, and you know, here's one. You know that one. Most people would know that one, I bet, because it's a robin. And we're going to find robins everywhere in the state. And that's a song that I love to hear, too.
That's wonderful.
It's a wonderful song. Ryan, why are projects like the Great Wisconsin Birdathon important?
Well, the Great Wisconsin Birdathon is really important because it raises much-needed money for a lot of non-game bird conservation projects. Non-game projects generally struggle a little bit from finding the types of financial reserves that come through the various mechanisms associated with game animals. And so this is a really great way for people who care about birds to make a real big difference beyond just their own backyard. They can contribute funds that are going to go to directly helping Wisconsin birds. And there's not a lot of ways you can do that. And I would argue, short of direct kind of habitat or land acquisition type projects, this is the best way someone interested in Wisconsin birds could really make a real bang with their buck, so to speak.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with you on that. And there's some goals, I'm sure, financial goals. Karen, you're trying to raise money here, obviously.
Well, we are, because these are very needed projects. So the overall goal is $70,000. We'd like to raise a lot more than that. And, you know, if everyone who watched birds in the state would contribute just $5 or $10, just think what we could do for birds.
Yeah.
So this is a way to easily raise money. Ask your neighbors and friends for a few dollars. It's all, you can do it through the website. Just send things out through your Facebook page or by email, and then people can contribute right on there or by their cell phone.
You know, I think a lot of people who aren't hunters but are interested in birds wouldn't think about the federal duck stamp, for example, as a way. And here's this is a way right here where you can have a direct impact on the birding in your area and in our state.
Yeah, that's right. And if you are a Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative partner, and just about any group could be a partner, and bird cities as well, then your group gets to keep 50% of the money that you raise for your local projects, and the other 50% goes toward these statewide priority projects.
And those projects, and there's some great ones. I know there's one for Kirtland's Warblers, and actually I think I've got a Kirtland's here. Let me play that one. There's a Kirtland's Warbler, and there's one project that's going to work on protecting them.
That's right.
And what are some of the other ones?
Another one is the Whooping Cranes project, and a lot of people would like to go out on some of these tours. There's a couple tours that hint at maybe finding whooping cranes. Plus, there's actually a special a tour, and there's just three spaces left. It's a Kirtland's Whooping Crane trip, and So you need to check the Natural Resources Foundation website, and that money is not a birdathon tour, but it is money that goes to the Bird Protection Fund, which will benefit.
Very cool, very cool. Well, let's go to Justin in Waupaca next. Justin, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a little sore. I have a PhD in zoology, and I've been a lifelong birder, and I was just calling to share an experience I had last winter. I saw a gray jay in Waupaca, and I reported it to some of my friends who are you know, probably participating in the event that you're talking about. And there's a really, really complex and high amount of scrutiny in this process to get these sightings verified. And I was just hoping that your guest could comment on that. And I was hoping that amateurs like myself would be treated in a different way, a nicer way, a kinder way, so that our observations could be continually fed into these very, very important very, very important institutions like the event that you're talking about, without the bitter taste of disbelief, I guess, is what I'm going after. So then, okay. I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Justin, for calling. Well, that's what this project's all about, if I'm not mistaken, getting involvement. And Ryan, maybe you can comment on Justin's remarks.
Yeah, I think Justin's remarks are a little bit separate from the birdathon. The birdathon is very low key. No one's out there policing observations. It's very fun, very casual. And you do it to the degree of, you know, skill level that you can. That aside, to what he's referencing is kind of our ornithological record for the state. And so when you report a bird that is outside of an area that it's typically found, it undergoes some scrutiny. And that scrutiny is part of the scientific process. And it's important for the person who sees the bird to provide some level of detail as to what they saw and why it was the species they thought it was and not some other species that may be more common in the area. And when they submit it to a place like ebird.org, which is an online database for bird sightings, then it goes through a review process that kind of gauges the evidence, if you will. And then based on that evidence, a decision is made as to whether the bird is entered into the system or not. The State Society for Ornithology, WSO, also has a similar process for rare birds. I used to chair the records committee. And sometimes it's a little tough when your record doesn't get accepted. But it might just be that you didn't, it's not that they're saying you didn't see what you said you saw. It's more you may not have been able to provide a level of evidence that gets it to that point without some level of doubt. So I would just encourage Justin to keep plowing away, and everyone out there, if you see something rare, snap a picture, take some notes about what you observed. And one kind of guiding principle for me is extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. Yeah. And so if you keep that in mind, your rare bird records will hopefully get into the system.
Yeah, and Justin, I hope you do participate in this initiative. And again, Karen, go back. Where do people sign up? Where would Justin get himself involved in this project, or anybody else for that matter?
Right. Just take a look at wibirdathon.org and look for the button that says Start a Team, you can just browse through there. It's quite straightforward. And I have to say, too, that I think we've all been through what Justin has been through, you know, where we have I have gotten things rejected from the review committee, too. But if you do put it in eBird, it is still in your personal record. It just isn't open to the public.
Yeah, and so it's going to go into your record in eBird.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's important. Talking today about the 2015 Great Wisconsin Birdathon and about the birds of Wisconsin. Boy, the migration's just getting going now strong, and you want to get out there and take a look. I've been doing it in the mornings, and I really have been enjoying it a lot. And enjoying talking with our two guests today, Karen Etter, Chair of the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative, Karen Etter-Hale, and Ryan Brady, Research Scientist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Wildlife Management. Larry Mueller here, Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer, are here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk birding and the Great Wisconsin Birdathon with Karen Etter-Hale and Ryan Brady. So great to have them along, and thank you for listening in. Question or comment? Maybe you've participated as a birder. Maybe you have done it. Been involved in a bird count. Love to hear from you about that, or just questions about birds at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Actually, we had a Facebook question from Tim who says, I've already heard what sounds like over a dozen species in my backyard this spring. But I need help identifying birds by song. What resources are out there that could help Tim or anybody else for that matter? And Ryan, what do you think?
There's everyone learns in a little bit different way, so you kind of have to find the one that works best for you. There's a lot of online resources now that can be very, very, very helpful. The Cornell website, All About Birds, is a really good one to go to listen to bird songs. There's also one called Nature Instruct Dendroika, and that's kind of a mouthful, but if you Google Nature Instruct, you'll find your way there. You can listen to bird songs that way. There's CDs you can buy, which is another great way to listen. But, you know, above and beyond all the ways is being in the field. And not only if you're by yourself, one of the best ways is to hear a bird, not know what it is, and then go track it down. Because then when you go track it down, you'll have an experience to really connect you with that sound. And then you'll have a visual identification. And then you can put everything together, and your senses will really help you remember that better over the long term. The other best way is just to be out with someone who knows. The best learning tool is really to be out there with someone who's been through this over the years, and you'll learn very fast. So find yourself a mentor in that way, and it's a great way to learn.
Yeah, I've been out that way. And boy, it is really great to have somebody who really knows what they're doing and to be with them. Not only can they identify the songs, which in an amazing rate, as far as I'm concerned, but I'll usually pinpoint him a lot quicker than I can. And I know, Karen, you had a comment too.
Well, and that's why you should sign up for one of the Birdathon tours. There's quite a few tours, and you can go to wibirdathon.org to sign up. But there's everything from very casual ones for just $25 to the top of the line. Go out with Andy Polios and Carl Schwartz on a two-day spectacular migration in southern Wisconsin. This is...
I've been out with Andy.
Well, then you know. This is an unparalleled choice, and there's everything in between. And when I took another look at these this morning, I wanted to sign up for every one of them. And you can sign up for more than one because there's different places, different dates. And just check out some of these tour leaders. They are some of the best.
They know what they're doing. And again, where do you go to get that?
wibirdathon.org.
There we go. Nikki in Milwaukee has a question for us. Let's go there. Nikki, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. Ryan, I think this is especially for you. I noticed a week or so ago a blackbird near my backyard that had a white band that crossed its tail. And I thought, oh, that's an interesting mark on that bird. And then days later, last week one day, I was walking at the golf course near my house, and there was a robin that looked like it had been splashed with bleach. There were pure white spots that the pigment was gone from its head, its feathers, its tail, its wings, and it was spots that were the size anywhere from a pencil eraser to a quarter. And neither of the birds are acting ill, but the fact that I wish I did have my phone with me at the time, I would have taken a picture of it. But is there some problem, some disease that is affecting the pigment of feathers?
Sounds like a piebald robin.
Yeah, it's not a disease, it's not a health issue, it's a genetic issue, and it's related to albinism. So that's a partial albino condition known as leucism, and it will not negatively impact the bird's health. It does have negative effects on the ability of that bird to kind of camouflage itself or maybe find a mate and all those other things that normal robins or normal blackbirds have kind of evolved to handle.
I wonder about that blackbird with a band across the that could be a not necessarily a red-winged blackbird.
It may not be. It kind of depends on where on the tail it was. Sometimes the tail feathers will grow abnormally, too, if they have a kind of a nutritional deficiency. So it could be a number of things without seeing a picture or something.
Well, here's what one sounds like anyway.
And I was probably on one of the first crane counts, maybe 1980 or something like that, so that was early, and that was cold.
It was early and cold. Speaking of cranes, we're going to be talking about the International Crane Foundation and some of its challenges and opportunities for cranes in about 15 minutes or so here on the Ideas Net with Ann Lacy. Right now, though, Karen Etter Hale, chair of the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative Steering Committee, and Ryan Brady, research scientist with the DNR's Bureau of Wildlife Management, our guests as we talk about the great Wisconsin Birdathon. And Jim in Sauk Prairie with us next. Jim, hi. Thanks for calling.
I have kind of three questions, two of them related to each other. One, first one is, what is the connection, if any, to that second edition of the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas that's beginning mm-hmm. right now, just going on for 4 or 5 years, I think.
Yeah.
I attended a meeting on that. Second thing is, can you identify a bird by sound? Is that legitimate? And I'll give you an example. It's like whippoorwills. When I was growing up, I could remember not being able to get to sleep at night. Now I think I heard my first one this last year in 5 years. And what's happening to them? So those are my questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Well, Ryan, maybe I'll turn to you for that. The connection to the Breeding Bird Atlas, probably not a direct connection, is there, or is there?
Well, the biggest connection is that one of the things that makes the Atlas possible are donations through the Great Wisconsin Birdathon.
Ah.
It's one of the priority projects that is supported. But in terms of the Birdathon tours and so forth, they're not necessarily linked. However, folks who go on the Birdathon tours or any other bird field trips or bird outing through their Great Wisconsin Birdathon effort can enter data into the Atlas. The Atlas is a project that tries to document breeding birds throughout the entire state over a five-year period. So anywhere within the state, you can submit data that says, hey, I saw a robin on a nest, or hey, I saw a family of turkeys, and you can enter it online into our data system. To the second question about whippoorwills, yes, they have been declining for a number of decades now. That is one of the birds that we are monitoring through the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative through some of our nocturnal surveys. And no one has a real good grip, to be honest, as to why. But a lot of birds that eat insects, particularly out of the air, the aerial insectivores, a lot of those birds are declining, and there may be some related links there with lower numbers of insects available to them. There's probably also some habitat issues where we are reforesting our landscape right now, and whippoorwill is kind of like a more edgy, disturbed kind of landscape.
Yeah, but they were... I can recall so many fun evenings listening to whippoorwills, and that's kind of sad not to hear those songs. But speaking of songs, Jim had a question about can you legally or legitimately, I guess, ID a bird by its sound? And Karen, I think you can. Can you?
You certainly can. The key is to make sure that is indeed what you're hearing. It's quite easy with whippoorwills, of course. But this time of year, some people get a few birds confused. Also, the European starlings are very good imitators.
Yes.
Catbirds, which are coming a little bit later, are also good imitators. Blue jays do a number of things that are always surprising and throw you off. But yes, I would definitely include anything that I heard, screech owls, for instance,
mm-hmm.
As long as you're sure. But check out those early birds, because the starlings especially are imitating all kinds of birds that aren't here yet.
Okay, there we go. You mentioned owls, and Eric in Boyceville wondered if there are any owl watching events during the Birdathon.
I have to check what time some of these start.
I'll take a look, and
certainly you can, and you can hear barred owls during the day sometimes. Mm-hmm. So there's one now.
There's one right now. Who cooks for you? Oh, those are wonderful songs, aren't they? So there are, some opportunities.
I think there are, and so I've heard great horned owls during the day too, and certainly if you start at an early hour, and if you're doing your own birdathon, or as a team, then you can certainly start or continue during the night. Which brings up another point: we have two teams who are going to go head to head. They're going to bird 24 hours, so they'll definitely get owls. They're going to start, I think, each at midnight. There's going to be somebody along tweeting. And the team, we have some great team names, as you mentioned before, Larry. One team is Tom Presby, Quentin Yorger, and Cynthia Bridge. They're the Cleopatra and the Stilts. and Al Shea and Randy Hoffman are Curlew and Screech. And they are the team that once tallied 230 species in 24 hours in Wisconsin. So
unbelievable.
This is going to be a real event, and everyone should watch for details on that.
Well, I love a lot of the names of the groups. That's, it was just kind of fun to go online just to see the names of the groups.
Well, it is.
They all sound like a lot of fun, sound like fun people, and you know, God, I like to go with those guys.
Well, and there's often a story behind that, too. So you can just go to wibirdathon.org and check out the teams and see if they have a little story posted. My personal team, the Finch Gang, has a story behind it. It's not just goldfinches and purple finches and whatnot, but the Finch Gang was a real group in Jefferson County that stole horses back in the near the Civil War era, or so they say.
Or so they say. Okay.
And hey, Larry, if I might interject, too.
Yeah.
Some of the WPR listeners from may recognize a lot of the team members or team captains that are participating as well. So Noel Cutright, who is obviously a wonderful guest for many years, originally started with the team, the Hawkeye and the Ancient Murrelets. And with Noel's passing, that team has carried on under the leadership of Carl Schwartz, and now it's Cutright's Old Coots. And so that's a great team to support. Bill Volkert, another one of your guests, is leading a team throughout Horicon Marsh. Andy Polios and Carl Schwartz, who have been WPR contributors, we've already mentioned their big Hotshot Bonanza team and tour that they're leading. So there's lots of great opportunities to support people who are familiar to us, either through the radio or someone in our neighborhood.
By the way, on our Facebook page, we have some wonderful photos, bird photos that people have posted. I'm looking at them now, and I'm having an awful time even trying to find one bird that's camouflaged in a tree. It's just unbelievable. So go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can see that. There's a wonderful shot of a white-breasted nuthatch. And also, we got ourselves a hawk there. Is it a red tail? Anyway, there are several there, and I don't know. Oh, we don't have the computer turned on over on your side, unfortunately. So, Karen, so you're not able to see it. But I'll tell you what, take a look at our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can see some really nice photos of birds. Ed in Presque Isle has something. Hi, Ed. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. How are you guys doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I'm sitting at the village market in the town of Manitouish Waters. A couple of things. Red poles are up almost for the last two or three months. And about 4 days ago, we had one come in that was a red pole, but it was a white color. And I'm thinking there's a term for that. And I think that term's spud, but I'm probably wrong with that. We did get pictures, et cetera, so I don't know if that's a rare thing that, you know, no. And then just on the other topic, our ice went out within the last 2 days, and the next morning and that evening that the ice went out, the trumpeter swans came in, the loons came in, we had concentrations of Canadian geese, and then the battle started. So we'll have to wait and see how that works. But I was really amazed at how aggressive loons are as far as trying to drive other birds away.
Thanks for calling. I love that area of the state. You're in a wonderful spot there in Manitouish waters, for sure, Ed. Thank you so much for calling. Ryan, a comment from you?
Yeah, I think he mentioned on the red pole some whitish. If it was kind of splotchy, then that's that leucistic individual that we were mentioning earlier. If it was more kind of a uniform frosty color, there's another species that's rarer in the state. It's called a hoary red pole, and it's possible it was one of these hoary red poles. As to the swans and the loons and so forth, yeah, it's always amazing. As soon as that ice opens up, the birds find it. We had a really big migration across Wisconsin Saturday night, so Sunday, people probably noticed, especially in the north, a lot of new birds around, and then we had another good migration last night. I think the research has shown with loons that they're not so much married to each other and their mates over a long term, but they're more married to their lakes. So their lake is kind of their house, and that's what they want to protect most, and so that's why they're very aggressive towards all these other birds.
Yeah, they don't want anybody else there. They're a lot of fun to watch, that's for sure. Ed, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, since we decided to shoot mourning doves, how does that population fare?
As far as I know, the mourning dove population is stable in Wisconsin. I don't have any specific data on it at hand, but I think it's probably doing all right.
Yeah, Ryan, anything from you on that?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any noticeable declines or other population trends. That harvest is regulated like all of our harvests are. So if we were to see some declines, then that would in turn change those regulations.
Yeah. Phil in Shell Lake, your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Phil.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm wondering if I saw a raven a month or two ago. I was out in my front yard, and I heard what sounded like a low croak and looked around. It was too early for frogs to be out. And I saw a couple crows chasing what looked to be a bigger crow, perhaps. And I realized that the bigger bird was making this croak from time to time, and they were chasing it away. And I was just wondering if crows will chase ravens, and if we could have a raven up here in northwestern Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, you could have a raven there. I'm pretty sure of that, Ryan.
Yes, ravens are found throughout much of the state. And, in fact, their population is doing pretty well, and they're starting to shift southward a bit down towards the more populated parts. But, yes, crows are very territorial in the springtime. So they will go and chase just about anything that flies into their airspace around their nest. So that sounds exactly like what you observed. You had a raven passing through. The crows saw it as a threat. Usually one of the crows comes flying up out of the trees, and you can see it pumping its wings fast as hard, flying as fast as it can go, trying to catch up to that bird so it can chase it off and get it out of its territory.
Yep.
Yeah, I had one just the other day over my house in Jefferson County, and two crows actually, and they were after an eagle. And it looked like it probably actually hit the bird. The eagle barely flinched, but the crow looked like it looked so small compared to that. Just
to
one
that
wing
eagle.
Of the eagle, and it was just the size difference is incredible. But they were after it.
Yeah, for sure. There you go, Phil. I'm sure I've seen ravens in the Shell Lake area in the past. So, Larry and Walkie, and just as an aside, now I wish I had a raven sound, but I don't have a raven sound up here to listen to. But there's nothing like that sound. Especially in northern Wisconsin, you get out in the middle of the Shawamigan National Forest or someplace like that, and you're sitting there and it's kind of quiet and you hear those ravens start to call. It's almost like prehistoric again, you know? It's really something. Larry in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
As a young man in the Waukesha area, when in the late 40s, early 50s, Saturday night was our shopping night. We came in from Eagle to Waukesha to buy groceries, and the summer sky was full of nighthawks over the city. and they were wonderful. They swooped and swept back and forth and called a strange raspy call, and they're not there anymore. What do you suppose happened to them? My theory is that Waukesha has changed its lighting systems a couple of times since then, and perhaps they support a lower insect population.
Well, that's a good question, Ryan. Do you have any ideas?
Along the same vein as the whippoorwill, it's something we obviously see as declining, but the reasons why are still a bit of a mystery. There's a number of things, and they're probably all coming into play, but just in short, there could be fewer insects available now for them to eat. They often, in these urban areas, will nest on flat gravel rooftops. Well, gravel rooftops are kind of a thing of the past and not really used anymore, so those rooftops are not available for nesting. We have many more nest predators now, especially gulls and crows that eat the nighthawk eggs and chicks. So that's putting additional pressure on them. And just general loss of open grassland, native grassland and wetland habitat, which they use outside of their urban areas. So, yes, definitely something that we've noticed. And the second breeding bird atlas, which the Birdathon supports, will help us really quantify those declines quite well as we take a snapshot of the next 5 years of where those birds are and in what numbers and compare it back to what we found 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Birdathon also supports monitoring the night jars, and the nighthawks and whippoorwills are included in those surveys. So support the Birdathon.
Well, I for one missed them terribly. They were just a wonderful experience in the summer evenings.
Well, your best bet now is to head out there in late August, early September, when we have good numbers of them still migrating south. So go out on a warm late summer night in that time period, and you may get to see some flocks moving south again.
There we go.
Terrific. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And here we are. The time has flown, so to speak. here, as we were talking about birds and the Great Wisconsin Birdathon, and here's an opportunity to have fun, get involved in the project, and if you can't get involved, I tell you what, you can support it financially, and that's kind of what it's all about, Karen. We need to raise some money to support these projects we were talking about.
Every dollar counts, so jump in and send some money.
And where do we, and again, we've got a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We also have links, by the way, Cheyenne and her usual efficient self has those links for identifying bird sounds that Ryan mentioned earlier. It's up on our Facebook page, too. But again, how do we get involved? Where do we go?
Just go to wibirdathon.org and browse the website, and you'll find everything you need.
What's the name of your group, Ryan?
We're the Lake Superior eBirders.
Oh,
represent eBird.org. We do a lot of work with eBird. eBird is very important, and so that's what we would like to represent. So if you support Lake Superior, if you support the Northwoods, if you support eBird, then please donate to our team.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you both for being with us today, and I'm hoping that I'm sure we'll get a good response from this. Karen, thank you, and Ryan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks.
Appreciate it very much. Isn't it fun? It's, you know, there were a lot of fun talking about birds and the Birdathon. And actually, at one point, cranes actually came into the conversation. And we're going to be talking about cranes and the International Crane Foundation next here on the Ideas Network. You stay with us. Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.